Please be seated. Between the words that are spoken and the words that are heard, may the Spirit of God be always present. Amen. So this Sunday, joy, joy to the world, the King has come, let heaven and earth rejoice. Alas, still no birth narrative, or anything indeed that hints at being vaguely Christmassy. Instead, John the Baptist proclaiming who he is not while pointing to Jesus in sort of a veiled way, the one who is to come. Now, last week we were being pointed in every possible direction as we were thrown backwards and forwards by the texts. But this week, John points to Jesus, the one who is coming after him, while stating quite clearly what he is not. He is not the Messiah or Elijah or the prophet. Who are you? The priests ask. Who are you? John answers quite simply that he is the voice of one crying out in the wilderness. He is very clear about who he is. But the question is repeated in a veiled way because, as John perceives, they are really asking, are you the Messiah? Really digging into it. Because in ancient times, lots of false messiahs popped up. They would gather a small following and then either fall apart or be quickly snuffed out. And this was the proof to the religious authorities that this was indeed not the Messiah. John is not trying to gain anything for himself, although he did have followers at one point. Instead, he's testifying to what God is up to and who is coming, quoting the passages from Isaiah to grab the people's attention, including that of the priestly leadership. He is clear about who he is, and although he is not Jesus, like Jesus, we know he will eventually be killed by the political authorities because he's not saying what people want to hear. In other words, speaking truth to power usually requires sacrifice. Today in Powell River, we are unlikely to be killed for speaking our truth, although I will not guarantee it. In fact, in recent years, since the Me Too movement, speaking our truth has become something that has been welcomed and encouraged, especially in and by communities that have been previously silenced. This week, in our Bible study, The Path, we read the creation story from Genesis. The format, as you know, is very simple. God said, let there be light. God said, let there be a dome in the midst of the waters, and so on. Basically, that God spoke and things were created. We talked about all kinds of things, about time and God, evolution and God. But what stood out to me was the acknowledgement that there is power in words, real power in words. God spoke, and so it was. There is power in the things we say. If you stop and think for a moment, we can all probably think of an instance from childhood when someone said something that affected us so deeply that we still remember it decades later, whether it was positive or negative. We may also remember things that we have said and know that they impacted a person in a certain way and have feelings about that one way or the other. John shows us that what we say about who we are and who we are not matters. And it matters particularly as followers of Jesus. And in the church, what we say about God and who we are in relation to God is called testimony. Instantly, a cold shudder whips round the pews in Anglican churches when you say the word testimony. It's rather like evangelism. Ooh. It's not as big a part of our tradition as it is in other denominations. However, it does exist and it is important. And right here in John's Gospel, we see John the Baptist modeling it for us, what it means to testify to the way God broke into history in the person of Jesus. Now, as Anglicans, we tend to be fairly reserved when it comes to testimony. Even the extroverts among us may feel some trepidation about speaking testimony or witness to what God is doing. But what is it? It is quite simply your own witness about what God has done in your life, in our lives. What do you know personally about God and how that relationship has affected and changed you? When you speak testimony about God, it is your truth. The gospel according to you, you might say. John did it. Peter did it. You remember that spectacular Pentecost sermon? The apostle Paul did it with gusto and repeatedly, including in front of a court. So it's something that's been modeled for us again and again, but for some reason we are scared to do it. Many people are afraid to speak about God in their lives because society finds God talk less and less acceptable, even though it is everywhere. Politicians talk about God as being for or against certain things. We're seeing some really sad evidence of that in the United States right now. Athletes wear 316 on their cheeks. The guys who play the football, and somehow this like war paint kind of makes it easier to see, but the 316 makes it like holy and easy to see. You see it on bumper stickers. We find it in national anthems, on crests, and even on currency. But bring up God at a dinner party, and you may well hear the sound of crickets signaling your exit. But what if we did talk about God freely and with abandon? What if we seriously strive to live in the way that Paul instructed the Thessalonians from that chunk of his letter today? Praying and rejoicing together in everything, listening for the Spirit in everything we do. It sounds a bit intense, but like anything, I think practice makes perfect. And when you're practicing something and you get better at it, it becomes a more authentic part of yourself. And so it is not received with crickets. This has been my experience, at least, because when you wear a collar, you just kind of get dragged into testimony even when you don't want to. Because people ask, especially as a woman. People are like, oh, nice Halloween costume. But the thing is like everyone in this room knows how to do it. You remember, for example, when we met together to discuss our hopes and dreams for this place and discovered that there are multiple people who think that the Children's Church is important and felt called to start doing it. And indeed, it is happening downstairs right now. And the kids love it. They love it. How about when we were feeling a bit flat about finances and our ability to do anything, and we just took stock of what we had and decided to give thanks for our gardens and our space and find a way to use it for the community. And the garden has come alive again, and our cup overflows with a grant, not from the church, but from the local city to provide an irrigation system so that it may become even more abundant. This Thursday, there'll be a solstice service outside on the labyrinth, which has not been in use for some time. And that invites people into our community to come and celebrate once again here at the church. John proclaimed, "Make straight a path for the Lord." But Paul was dealing with something that we deal with ourselves, the delay in the return of Jesus. And the people of the early church were asking, how do we live? What do we say? The answer, actively, dedicated to God, listening to the Spirit as all of us have been doing here together over this past couple of years. Live joyfully, with exuberant gratitude for everything that we have and for each other. This is how we wait, and as countercultural as it is, it actually works. I don't know if you have noticed, our church is growing. Paul is telling the Thessalonians, in the same way that his letter speaks to us, avoid what is evil. In other words, avoid what does not lead you to God. Speak only words of goodness, because, as we discovered on Thursday, we know that words have the power to create great things. We're also called to lean on each other as a community and break bread together to sustain our faith and find joy in the gifts that God bestows on us. The gifts are evident in everyone here. In this beautiful place, in our gardens, our ministry to children, to those in the community, in the way the everyone deserves a smile box literally overflowed and shocked the lady who was picking it up last week. The Spirit is busy here. And as we keep moving forward with this journey and waiting together, we act together to prepare the way of Jesus in this time and place and point to Jesus like John the Baptist did. And as we do this, it will get easier to talk about what God is doing in this place because we will be doing more with God. And it won't feel awkward or weird because no one will be able to deny the genuine love that exists here, the abundance that is bubbling up and will overflow into the community around us. Now, if you're sitting here feeling like this is not possible or not realistic, if the weight of the world with its various wars seems too heavy, if it looks too bleak, if the grief of this time of year is too overwhelming, remember, you are not in this alone. This was a message that Paul wrote to an entire community. This is a message written to our community, that God will do this. God is doing this, and you can trust that God will keep working through you because you have witnessed it before. Literally every one of you in this room has a testimony about how you have encountered God and how it has changed something in you and for you. And it is God who will help us find our voices in this time and place. So do not be afraid, as the angel would say if we had a birth narrative. Amen.